Hello, everyone. You are listening to Shadow Talk, the weekly threat intelligence podcast that covers the latest news impacting the industry. We are recording in the UK on this episode, and joining me, we have Adam, Demelza, and Stefano. So welcome, guys. Hello.
Hello, Victoria. Hello. How are you?
Hello,
yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, all good. We have a new speaker today, and that's Stefano. It's quite nice because you're a listener, but now you're on the other side and you're joining us to discuss the topic. So yeah, it's nice to have you. And we have quite a packed agenda today. So we're going to get started with a story that actually kind of dates back to the 8th of June, but I think it's quite important to just walk through the timeline, I guess, in some sense. So the Honda Twitter account had posted a tweet saying that it had experienced technical difficulties and that it was unavailable. That actually turned out to be, in fact, a cyber attack. And so we thought we would just delve into the sort of developments around that. I guess, Demelza, like at the time, what was impacted and then what details were available around the attack?
Sure, yes. So at the time, like you said, Honda just announced that their financial and customer service systems were down, but there weren't any other further details. But then very quickly the next day, they actually announced that it wasn't impacted a cyber attack. And then again, very quickly, as security researchers were sharing samples on Twitter that confirmed or suggest at least that this is actually a sample of ECANS, I'm not sure how you say it, or Snake ransomware, which was actively searching for an internal Honda network. So this wasn't just your average case of ransomware. This affected their ability to use their internal computer systems, such as emails, but also their actual production lines. So it's a work outside of Japan. So their plants in the UK, North America, Turkey, Italy, all their production lines were paused. So this was a seriously effective attack if that was their aim. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at Snake ransomware because it is very different to your average strain as it targets the entire network. I think that's right, Adam. I'm sure you'll know more about this than I do. But from what I understand, it hunts down hard-coded internal host names in order to encrypt the entire system rather than individual devices.
You just summed it up a lot better than I could. So yeah, don't bother including me next time. Yeah, no, it operates. It came into the news in February this year and took the interest of a lot of security researchers because it was acting like a normal piece of ransomware in terms of encrypting and stealing data, but also, as Demi's just said rather perfectly there, terminating processes specifically to do with industrial control systems and various vendors who provide those products.
Yeah, and I think it's also really interesting because we normally only see this type of vector at a kind of state-sponsored threat actor level. So this is definitely a big change in the threat landscape for the private sector that has huge consequences in terms of their finances, in terms of kind of actually being able to access their customers, but actually in terms of their production lines. This is definitely a big one to be looking at.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's like we've been talking about with ransomware quite frequently over the last couple of episodes, these new capabilities with these kind of tools is blurring the lines between what we would typically associate with financially motivated threat actors and like Demi says, they're state associated. So it's all up in the air at the minute, which makes things interesting. Sorry, Victoria, I interrupted you.
No, don't worry. I think it was more just to say, I guess, the as if they don't have enough to deal with, you know, they probably just halted their operations as a result of COVID and now they have to deal with this as well. It's just like so many things to contend with. I think one of the reports I also read was that the most famous example of a virus or say an attack that targets industrial controls is Stuxnet, is that correct? Have I said it right?
Stuxnet,
sorry. Which was, jointly developed by Israel and the United States and was used to destroy centrifuges. So yeah, it's very interesting now to see that, as we said, kind of move towards the private sector. And I guess, you know, as with most breaches, this is always something to watch. It's not conclusive yet. And I think that was what one of the reports said, that the details will have to kind of emerge once there is an internal review. So, it's good to kind of see the speculation and this sort of conversation happen around this cyber attack. I guess in terms of the operations, that was on the 8th, that was about 10 days ago. So have things resolved since then, I guess?
So far, we haven't seen any breach data come out. Honda came out very early on saying that no PII was breached. But of course, we can't know if something's going to kind of come out in the following weeks. At first, Honda came out really, really strong in their stance that nothing was going to come out. And we have seen that position weaken slightly. So it'll be really interesting to see if anything does come out in the coming weeks, especially with the growing trend we've seen recently with data being auctioned off to the highest bidder rather than just sent out for free on forums. So watch this space.
Absolutely, absolutely. Awesome. So moving on, we now have an update related to malware. So this was malware that was used in 2019 on a utilities company. But that research, which was new this week, has linked that to a threat actor. So that's TA410 by researchers. So yeah, I think when I read the report at first, I was like, they're talking about something that's happened in 2019, not really sure what's happening here. And then obviously when I read a bit further, it was linking it to the threat actor, which is a lot of emphasis on that. So yeah, Adam, I was just wondering, what key themes would you kind of pick out from this research?
Absolutely. This is this is something that has garnered my interest since the original reporting actually emerged in August last year, whereby researchers were attributing malware called Lookback to attacks against the United States utility sector. And some of the interesting things that they were talking about at the time is not only the functionalities of the malware and the persistence of the campaigns, but some other nuances in the use of TTPs, specifically a command and control communication proxy that was also associated with the Chinese state-linked threat group APT-10. And at the time, that was all unconfirmed, and we didn't really hear anything more about those campaigns until recently, whereby the same researchers published new research detailing a new piece of malware that they're calling FlowCloud, which has been kind of used simultaneously in line with Lookback, using very similar TTPs, functioning as a remote access Trojan in a very similar way to Lookback, using very similar spear phishing techniques, and actually not only targeting the same utilities organizations, but actually going after the same recipients with those spear phishing emails. And one of the interesting things for me, having read and reported on those stories at the time, was that they have now done a little bit more research into those associated APT-10 TTPs and have proposed or kind of theorized that this might be a false flag operation, whereby all the APT-10 TTPs or code samples or C2 communication techniques were publicized by other security researchers, only then to feature afterwards in these Lookback and FlowCloud campaigns. So while it's not confirmed, the fact that these TTPs have kind of been out there, publicly disclosed, and are now suddenly featuring in these attacks provides an interesting discussion point, because false flag techniques are something that we would typically associate with state-linked groups, because it is very beneficial for states to have attribution for their attacks blamed to someone else, etc. So yeah, loads of really interesting things, lots of stuff to get stuck into in the Insum this week.
So I actually have never heard of a false flag before, and maybe some of our listeners might not be aware of it, but what would you define it as?
Yeah, so false flag technique or operations is where a threat actor will use a well-known TTP, be that a code sample, a piece of infrastructure, or a malicious tool that is known to be associated with another tracked group or entity. So thereby creating false claims of attribution once people try to reverse engineer or analyze that attack. So there's a really good example of that would be the attacks against the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, the Olympic Destroyer malware, which disrupted the opening ceremony. And at the time, there was a load of code samples in there or pieces of infrastructure. I can't quite remember what the specifics of it were, that were linking either North Korean or Chinese state-associated attackers. Retrospective analysis of that since then, I think, has occurred, and it's more likely that these were Russian state-associated attacks. So you can see how that fits in nicely with state directives, in that Winter Olympics in South Korea is something that, you know, an event that North Korean threat actors would likely, you know, want to disrupt or ruin the reputation of, as it were. So yeah, false flags, definitely something that we would typically associate with those state groups, but no confirmation yet that TA-410, which is this how these new groups being tracked are associated with any state.
I really like the name FlowCloud. Do you approve of it?
I do approve of it. I think when that feature happens, that would definitely... Nothing on Milkman Victory, though. Not yet. I haven't had one in 2020 that beats Milkman Victory in terms of malicious...
You'll have to start ranking them.
Yeah, definitely. Keen for that, actually. It's an open source project. Everyone can get involved. It's not just me.
Yeah. You could also do like a sweepstake of, you know, you could name a malware and see if it hits on it maybe in the future and report it.
Well, find me something better than Crouching Yeti and then you win the game.
So Adam just provided a really great overview there, and we have more information which can be found in our INSUM. So I'll provide the details around how you can get access to that at the end of the podcast. So moving on, we have a sort of different story, which is related to the misconfiguration of a database. And it kind of sends alarm bells ringing in my head when I read the story. But what happened is that a database related to hundreds of thousands of sensitive dating app profiles, including images of a graphic and sexual nature, were exposed. And this was discovered by researchers. So another part of this story is that I find it sort of interesting that poor researchers have to stumble across this data and see what's in these databases, and they definitely must have had a shock when they saw what was inside. So the misconfiguration, it was reported by the researchers, firstly exposed very sensitive data in terms of images, but on top of that it also revealed an entire AWS infrastructure through unsecured admin credentials and passwords. So yeah, that was what the kind of key takeaways from that researcher, or from the, what the researcher said. And I guess, yeah, this story, I guess, it's not unique, I'm afraid. Like, this is the things that we've spoken about before. And it does point to broader themes, I guess, in the industry around misconfigurations. Particularly the Verizon data breach report 2020 actually highlighted that error is now ubiquitous in all of the verticals this year. So what they mean here is that along with phishing and stolen credentials, error, so misdeliveries or misconfigurations, are one of the top threat action varieties in breaches. And this is down to a number of things. Of course, it's like a number of factors. But I mean, a few to kind of name would be like lack of central ownership and a lack of knowledge as to how to configure these, as well as the controls in place that's not sometimes set to default. These obviously influence the frequency of these misconfigurations. And on top of that, you also have other areas around misconfigurations, and the fact that, for example, you have very sensitive data such as the infrastructure, like the AWS credentials, admin credentials and passwords being exposed. And I think that is a broader problem. So, for example, this month, or actually this week, Digital Shadows released new capability called the unauthorized code commit. And that points to a broader story around how data is being inadvertently exposed online, particularly code platforms, but also cloud platforms that people don't know are exposing data. And in this case, the story that I initially began with was around white hat researchers, but at the same time, we also have malicious actors using these cloud storage or locating data within it to kind of drop ransomware, even malware. And we actually have a story which links quite nicely to this. So yeah, Stefano is going to kind of just talk about how one of the one story that was released by researchers highlighted that malicious actors were dropping malware via cloud platforms, which is something that I haven't heard about. So I'm quite interested in this one, Stefano. So I was just wondering if you could just highlight the key themes from that research.
Yeah, sure. It was actually like a very interesting event, considering also the fact that the delivery of malware through cloud storages is one of the fastest growing trends in 2020. And this is a worrisome one, considering exactly what you were referring to about the events disclosed about CloudEye. So basically, this Italian company has operated an apparently legal cryptography business for 4 years, and they even possessed a well-advertised website on the surface web with online tutorials on how to abuse Google Drive and OneDrive. So they were quite blunt on it. And according to researchers, the operation was like a front to provide binary protection for malware against reverse engineering. And the problem, the main problem resides in the fact that also researchers had discovered the same owners of this company advertising the product on criminal forums on the dark web in the past years. So on one side, we have them on the front, say, having like a website on the surface web advertising the services. And at the same time, they were doing the same thing on the dark web. So it was a pretty big thing, especially considering the growth in like in the practice of developing and selling malicious hacking tools. So pretty big one, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess on top of that, we have a change in consumer behavior where people are now moving to the cloud. And so the cyber criminals are kind of adapting their strategies to meet our new behaviors. So yeah, I do find that quite interesting. And one thing I guess you said is that it's one of the biggest trends in affecting, I guess, that area. Is that correct? And I would like to, I hope, I guess it's always the case on this podcast, we don't really want to be talking about the biggest trends that are impacting, but it would be interesting to see how this develops or if it's picked up by other attackers in this space. So yeah, I guess another one to kind of watch as per.
Definitely. I think it's going to grow a lot because, as you were saying, as more company moves to the cloud, there's definitely going to be more chances for hackers and criminals to exploit that factor. So hopefully they won't, but I'm pretty sure they will at some point.
Pivot points are another good thing to think about with that, right? If you compromise cloud infrastructure or a cloud hosting service that has multiple, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people or users hosting their data there, you've suddenly got a wealth of potential victims to further exploit and conduct further fraudulent activity depending on your intent or your motivation, etc.
Well, that sums up everything for this week. So thank you everyone for joining me on the episode. Hopefully we'll get to see you all soon in the flesh. In terms of content, if you'd like to find out more, you can read our INSUM, and you can also find that by going on to resources.digitalshadows.com. So that is a wrap. Thank you all for joining.
Thank you, Victoria. Stay safe, everyone.
Thank you. It's been nice to be here.